Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for this week of June. Oh, man.
You're getting less and less good at this. You think you have to give the date every time, but you know, well, last time it was, you could kind of guess the date, I think, and then this time it's some week in June.
Yeah, I don't want to see the days go by because they're stressing me out. So I prefer actually not to know what day it is.
Squint your eyes in the haze.
Yeah.
Kind of a hazy time passage.
Yeah. The passage of time is terrifying to me. How quickly it's going.
Yeah.
So that's because we're going to GAFCON.
Yes.
And I have a lot of things to do before I can do that. I don't even know what they all are. I mean, I keep writing them down, but I can't keep them fixed.
See, I think you write. This is one of the things that makes me irritated about you. We should begin this group for some recriminations.
Yeah, the daily recrimination. What is it this week?
Because everything of this nature always sorts itself out in the end. So, you know, if we were just to wake up on Friday morning and throw stuff in a suitcase, we'd be fine.
Yeah, that's the man way. The reason it sorts itself out in the end is because I run around like a frantic person doing it. You're of the magic coffee table. I'm going to find it and link it, where you put stuff down on the table and then you come in and say, look at this magic table. I put stuff here and it disappears. If you put dirty laundry here in the morning, it's folded and put away. Yeah. So things do just work
but
out
no,
for you.
No, see, I lived without a wife until I was almost 30 years old.
Yeah, and it but worked you out had that a way. Mother who would, like, check up on you and do nice things for you, like, make sure that you didn't live in complete, you know, barbarism and filth. So, no. Yeah, you can't wake up on Friday morning and pack for a week. In Jerusalem.
How difficult. You know what you need.
You don't.
Toothpaste, toothbrush, shampoo, clothes. You're done.
Okay.
You're set.
What are you going to put it all in?
I don't know. A suitcase somewhere. Where are our suitcases?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have them because our animals, felt like they were nice places to sit and then to use as latrine.
What? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, this is a genuine issue that I'm dealing with. Like,
do we not have any suitcase?
We might have one or two, but we have to we have to really consider it this week, because you may go to GAFCON with a bag that reminds you of how much you love your cat.
Oh my goodness. Well, at least we'll be able to identify it.
Yeah.
When
it comes down the thing.
It's just smell.
Yeah.
Right.
So, this is not what the podcast was going to be about today.
We actually have topics.
Yeah, we have like 3 or 4 things. So we thought we would, Andy Stanley said something foolish that we can't pass by.
Well, must be Tuesday.
And then we have been sent a link to something that is really charming and asked to look at it, which we did. And I would just like to note at this point that I thought you should close the window before the truck arrived.
We just started.
And I think that you should close the window, because that thing is going to keep going for hours outside. You go close the window while I... And then I thought we would say some nice things about Anthony Bourdain, even though I wrote about him yesterday. You've been sending me Anthony Bourdain recipes. Why have you been doing that? Are you expecting me to, like, cook those things that he cooked?
I was saying it to myself.
Oh, okay. So you thought that you're going to spend some time this week cooking?
Yeah, sure. We can barbecue and stuff.
Because what do you have to do this week?
I don't have to do anything because I'm not writing a sermon, so
you're kind of at loose ends. So you thought you'd go on an Anthony Bourdain cooking time while I'm trying to pack and get the children ready for a week away.
I thought I'd be your emotional support by getting you good food.
My emotional support husband. Oh, man. I feel like it's going to be a really long week. So, well, I I said some things about Anthony Bourdain yesterday, but what did you like about watching his television programs?
Well, I like the travel was really nice, and you go. I like that he would do his best when he went to these places to not go to the, you know, 5-star restaurants or whatever. He would go to the dives, the mm-hmm. what the tourists might consider a dive anyway, and
the place where the good food really was.
Yeah, where the really really good food is, and he meet the people. I love the show. It was really interesting. I mean, I didn't like it when he got overly political, but the cultural stuff was fascinating, and he was an interesting guy, nihilist, I think, as far as his philosophy, and I wished but he's an interesting person, and I kind of wish he'd. Another thing I appreciate about him is he'd go to these places, like I think one of his most recent shows was New Jersey, or not New Jersey, West Virginia, and he spent some time with the coal miners there and ate their food, and he didn't, you know, you'd expect a New York chef
to be really sneering,
elitist, sneering, kind of like, you know, you wrote that review on Christianity Today about those two people who kind of went down as a anthropological strange people from another planet, but Anthony Bourdain didn't do that. He got to know them and came to respect them and like them in a way that most people in his probably crowd would not be able to do. So he
went to Mississippi in one program. That one was really beautifully shot. It was a really the photography was gorgeous, and the food was interesting, and the people were interesting.
But I always had sympathy for him because I felt like he was tortured. You know, he seemed tortured in the things that he would say in the videos and in his shows. Just every once in a while, it would kind of peek through this kind of despair.
Yeah.
About life.
Which did make great television, but it is tragic. And between him and Kate Spade last week. There was a Patheos article, I should find it, of a month ago or something, called "The Reason That You're Depressed is Cultural Collapse." Mm. And it was a really good article. I have no idea who wrote it. But that, you know, people find themselves depressed, one, because life is difficult, but two, because there's a cultural nihilism that's in the air, you know? Mm. And it affects even Christian people who would have in the past had cultural supports, would have had a framework to conceive of life, and all of that has been stripped away. And so I found it helpful because I thought, this is good. I'm frequently depressed. It's not just me. There's so much out there that kind of crowds in on the individual person and makes it hard to deal. And it's okay to say that. It's good to say that.
Yeah.
But then you know, that's sort of the base.
Kind of ripped out of context. I mean, maybe I'm being cliche here, but, you know, when I visited your village, the people who grew up there had an established culture. This is how you live. This is what you do. This is how you marry. This is who you are.
You didn't have to decide for yourself who you are.
It wasn't crumbling. It wasn't like this dystopic where you're looking around the world and saying, oh my goodness, how I've got to now create my own meaning because there's nothing left here. Yeah,
you had as you lived and died, there were certain functions that you would perform in society and in the village, and at different points at every funeral you had a role depending on how you were related to the person. At every marriage you had a role, you know, in your daily life you had something, you had a person, you would be somebody. Mm-hmm. You look at that in a place of incredible poverty and trouble. So the woman who's the third wife, the third younger wife of an older man. Look, you could diagnose her with depression at certain points. you know, she's not happy. She's not happy. Her older co-wife hates her. The next co-wife hates her. And then, you know, while she's wife number three, the old guy takes an 18-year-old, and he's like 80, as his fourth wife. Okay, and you're the third wife. You aren't happy. I'm not suggesting that life is, you know, was glorious in the past or it's better everywhere else in the world. But you are a person. You have a role and you have an identity. Hmm. Also, if you hate it, you can run away.
At least there's a cultural way of dealing
with
it too, right?
Yeah, and your family will take you back. Like, you don't, there's some women's empowerment that doesn't exist in other places around the world. And you have your own, like, if your husband married you, he has to build you your own kitchen. You have some autonomy. You have money-making capabilities. You have children. There's ways to relieve the stress and the sorrow of being in a difficult place. But I feel like here we've taken away, we've left the sorrow.
The West used to have that. Yeah. The West used to have not the same structures, but structures.
They used to have structures.
And so you grew up kind of knowing, again, who you were, what you were doing. Why you've been born. And again, not everything was wonderful and
glorious. No, and you may have hated it, right. But at least you had that. You had that at least.
Yeah. I can't help but think about how that relates to church, you know, because pastors wouldn't so much be worried about, oh my goodness, my church is going to fail because no one's going to come to church because everyone just went to church. this is what you did on Sunday. And so you... And you had this kind of hope of the church leavening society over time. And maybe I'm not saying it can't anymore, but it seems like we're on the edge of total collapse of all the structures. And the church is there.
The church is suffering because
people
trauma.
Come now without any sense that what is this place for? Why?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a Christian. I've come to faith in Jesus Christ.
Maybe.
I believe that whatever. But what is this place for? Why am I here? Why am I here? Why don't I just go to the church down the street?
Why did I get up this morning?
I mean,
yeah.
Do I really need this? And I guess the church has a potential to kind of rebuild part of that structure, like in the Dark Ages when Rome fell and all that was left was the man.
I see so much potential. Right.
we should call ourselves Potential Church.
I know, that is so great. That is so, like sheer genius, Potential Church.
So anyway, we're way off.
I think the church has the gospel, but I think the church needs to shift back and consider how it is that we engage. Okay, when you're facing a total societal collapse, you do have to engage, but people are going to come in, of course, who are suffering that total collapse in themselves. And so you have to start at the very ground level. You absolutely have to define every single word that you use. Mm-hmm. You cannot take anything for granted. Tragically, I think you have to be, we're learning this slowly, you have to be not surprised when people sort of drift away and have no, because they came in with no idea why they were there, and they...
I know that when someone says I'll be here next Sunday, if they're new, if I've just met them, I know to just generally take that with a grain of salt, because that requires actual
decision
to commit to come again to a place you've already been once on a Sunday morning, and
that's it's unfathomable and it's not, for many people.
Yeah, I mean, I would take it personally before, but I don't really take it personally because most of the people who say it to me, oh, I love this church, it's so wonderful, this sermon is so great, da, 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 da. But you don't see them again for a month.
Yeah, and then they come back and they're just, it's not insincere. There's a genuine enthusiasm.
Oh, great to be here. Right. And then they don't show up. I say, what are you doing? What do you think is going on here on Sunday morning? Are you seeing this as coming to the table of Jesus and eating with him? And are you seeing yourself as being fed by his word? Are you seeing this community as part of the new community that's going to be living forever with Jesus? Or what? Is this like a place
you come for? Yeah, you say that, word? and then they just look at you with like, what?
Like a cow hitting a new fence.
Yeah, what do you mean forever? What does that mean? What does that word mean?
Right.
Or table. I eat on a TV tray in front of my TV. Like, what is this table of which you there. Speak?
Right, of which you speak, right.
Yeah. No, it's tragic. The tragedy mounts up. People in this community are super depressed. You know, it's not celebrities who are committing suicide. There's like, people are just ODing on heroin, and it's very difficult psychologically to be a modern person and to make it through the day alive. I think.
No, admittedly, we live in Binghamton, so we're probably in the precipice, but we see the edge a lot more clearly than someone living in maybe a booming southern state or where the economy is going great and people are moving in. Here people are moving away. You know, it's so horrible. I was talking to a friend yesterday after church who came over, and he was talking about how he grew up here. And in the 80s, it was just this like, it was everyone wanted to be in Binghamton. It was the same. Really, like really people loved Binghamton. It was just like, it was nice. It was there. IBM was still here. A lot of the companies that moved out were still here. And so there was money here. Yeah. And it was the downtown. He said you couldn't, on a regular weekday or weekend, trying to walk downtown, you'd be pressed with people. Now it's like empty buildings.
Well, the downtown is having a little revival, but the mall is dying.
Yeah,
big behemoth mall is dying, and I think there's going to be two stores left over there.
Yeah,
and they've got to think about what to do. But yeah, that's a great rambling monument to a culture that's gone away and died.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, I would say if you're really depressed, if you're suicidal, call the suicide hotline, of course. But if you're just generally depressed and you just can't get out of bed in the morning, go to church.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people...
So last time we talked about Annie Stanley, he had said that the church should unhitch itself from the Old Testament.
Well, he seems to have completely done that now.
No, I mean, he's on that same line, but it's a...
We're not going to play the whole sermon. We just have a clip.
We just have a clip.
This is the only clip you need. You don't even need, like, context.
Yeah.
Normally, I would say the context really matters, but in this case, I don't think it matters at all.
So maybe before you do it, dive in, we should say what Marcionism is.
Okay. Why don't you do that? Yes. Let me. No, you do it. It's very early in the morning, and I can't think my way out of my tweeting.
So Marcion was a quote-unquote Christian who was also...
A heretic?
But he bought into Gnostic thought, hook, line, and sinker. And so Gnostics tend to have this radical separation from matter and flesh and spirit, body and soul. And the whole idea of resurrection, for example, to a Gnostic would be abhorrent. Why would we want to come back to our bodies? Our bodies are our prison.
And, I mean, I feel that in my own flesh every day.
Right. Well, so, but the basic Gnostic understanding of the cosmos is it starts off with this non-personal entity, which kind of splits into other entities, aeons, they call them. And ultimately what happened is there was a wicked aeon or a wicked kind of demiurge who decided to enflesh or to create matter and to trap spirits into bodies. And this
is scintillating.
Do you want to understand?
Yes, I do. I do. I want to have actual knowledge. Go on.
And so just outside the Christian framework, the Gnostic quest is to free your spirit person from your body prison, right? So you really are, you know, it's very much like what you hear in the New Age movement. Like you are God, and you've got to The problem is you're just not aware of how godlike you are.
Yeah.
And how once becoming aware of it, you can transcend your material body and become like God. So that's the kind of background. But then Marcion said, okay, well, the Old Testament is the revelation of this evil, wicked God who put everything together in matter. He created the world, the cosmos, and trapping matter, material persons.
And he got that from which biblical text?
And he's a law, he's about law and judgment and, he's a God of justice, but not a God of grace, right? And to save us from this Old Testament God, one of the other aeons sent Jesus, right? Who is an aeon himself, and he came to rescue people from this Old Testament God. And so, parts of the New Testament reflect who he is, and those were the parts that deal with grace, right? So all the grace and love and freedom passages, liberation passages, have to do with this Jesus, who's really an aeon. So what Marcion ended up doing then is he created his own version of the scriptures by cutting off the entire Old Testament.
And portions of the New.
Much of the New too, yes. 11 letters of Paul, or 11 books total, I think. Some Paul's writings and the Gospel of Luke. But each one of those was also edited to remove parts that were uncomfortable to Marcion. So he ends up with just this really...
Well, it's much shorter, so it's easier
to... Yeah, you can memorize the Marcion.
Easier to read. You don't like to read books, this would be the book for you.
Yeah.
Because it would only take you a few minutes and you wouldn't have to bother.
Yeah. So what really happens, though, when you're in there is that you take this kind of external philosophy, impose it on the scriptures, and make that external philosophy the measure of the scriptures rather than scriptures the measure of the philosophy. So and really you become the norma nomans, the measure of all of all truth. I like this part about Jesus, I don't like that part about Jesus because I have this philosophy. And so this is true and that's false. So Andy Stanley doesn't believe in the aeon stuff. He believes in one God, as far as I know, right? But he does have this kind of radical distinction between Old Covenant and New Covenant, in which they're not just one leading up to and illuminating the fulfillment in the second, but they're radically opposed to one another.
They're contrary.
Yeah, yeah, Andy Stanley's Jesus. I don't know how he says things like not a jot or a tittle.
Well, he doesn't say that, probably.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's real short.
Yeah, it's real short. But you just... was that too much?
Your introduction was longer than the clip.
Was that boring your listener?
I think we
have several listeners now, actually. No, when I say listener, I'm usually thinking about our mothers. But
we met our listener yesterday.
We met our whole listener,
yeah, and it was very exciting.
It was.
It was a total thrill to meet our listener. And I hope that you did not bore our listener, because that would be terrible.
Our listener seems like a perfectly reasonable person, too. I mean, yeah. It's not someone who's strange. You would think that...
Why do you think?
People listening to us
would be odd people.
Yeah, why
I don't think you should malign... Our listener that way.
I'm not. I said he's not. Or the
well,
person.
She.
She. Yeah.
Yeah.
The people.
That our listener was.
Yeah.
Had dual natures.
Okay. So let's get a clip here.
Yeah. I thought you had it up.
I did have
you
it
totally
up.
Totally.
And
like,
then I had to.
You just
surf
it
around
up.
Facebook first.
No, there it is.
There we go. Okay.
You had to surf around Facebook. Yes, the Lord called you.
All right.
Here's a question we've got to quit asking. And you're going to hate me for this, but we're not done. We've got another week. What does the Bible say? What does the Bible say? What does the Bible say about that? I mean, how many times have you asked that, heard that? I've been asked this, a thousand times. What does the Bible say about that? This is a really bad question we have to quit asking. Here's why. Because the Old Covenant says stone her, and the New Covenant says forgive her. That's what the Bible says.
What?
That's really funny.
So he pulls out from John chapter 8, which, by the way, is...
is disputed.
Yeah, it's disputed text. But he pulls that out. And because... if it... let's just assume it's apostolic. Because Christ, who is the king, the lawgiver, pardons a woman caught in adultery, which is his right as judge, who is also going to bleed for that woman and die for that woman.
He's actually going to die.
That's a contradiction with the old covenant.
Yeah. That's...
wow. And don't ask what the Bible says about it, because that's about anything, because you are then violating Andy Stanley's doctrine and dogma.
The old covenant says, pray for your enemy's death. And the new covenant just says, pray for your enemy.
Do we have a text for that?
That's what the Bible says. Let me tell you a better question. What does the new covenant teach? Let's be more specific. What does the New Testament teach? Or even better, what does Jesus teach? What does Jesus teach? Andy, are you saying there, that the two covenants that the Bible is conflicts? Yes.
Wow.
And there's the clip. That's why it doesn't matter about the context.
This is the kind of argument you get in with people who are who are Episcopalian, who say, well, show me where Jesus says anything about sexuality. And what they mean by that is, if it's not in the red letter portions of the New Testament, then it's not true. It's not. But of course, you know, who wrote those red letter portions? The apostles did. The same people who wrote the red letters. And so if you don't trust the words of the apostles, there's no reason why you should trust the red letter portions. And then, of course, if you believe that Jesus is God, Jesus refers to the Old Testament as God's word,
clearly Jesus isn't God.
Then he's the author of both the Old Covenant and the New Covenant.
I mean, what New I Testament. Like about this clip, though, if you watch it, is that he looks really angry and tortured.
He is. Look at him.
He looks...
looks like Satan.
He does look like Satan there.
Did God really say?
Yeah, he looks super angry.
Yeah.
Tortured, like...
his father, Charles Stanley, I just can't imagine. I mean, Charles Stanley is
a... it's got to be so heartbreaking for him, actually.
He's an Arminian, but he's... he believes the Bible.
Yeah.
Charles Stanley does. And his son is just completely off the rails. This is straight up here. Before he was trying to be a little more subtle. This is full on, full bore, no holds barred heresy.
It's even meaner. Like, at least Rob Bell, when he's talking, he's got his nice like flannel shirt and glasses and his boots, and he seems sort of friendly and happy. Like, I think he enjoys his heresy, like his food. But Andy Stanley here is like...
he's on a mission to destroy...
yeah, he's not having a good time here. Yeah, like, he looks really sad. And maybe God is persecuting him. That would be good. Like, maybe he feels really guilty. I
think he's got a lot of pushback, and I think he's probably feeling bitter because people are not buying into his stuff.
We should pray for him.
It's crazy.
In Liz's way.
We should pray for his death.
Oh, I know. Because that's what the Bible says.
That's what the Bible says, right?
The Bible says, pray for your enemies. I don't think that's what it says in the Old Testament,
I don't
though.
Think it says that in the Old
Where
Testament.
Where does it
either?
Say,
pray for
them to die?
I just hadn't seen that.
I didn't
that
come
text.
Across that. I mean, I've read it.
There are psalms in which people are praying for the destruction of their enemies, but those aren't necessarily prescriptive. Like, now you go and pray.
Yeah, when the psalmist is praying for God to break the teeth of the wicked, he doesn't say, and make sure that you also pray for God to break the teeth of the wicked. Although I know somebody who did that, was really upset, and was like, prayed for God to break the teeth of her enemy.
Yes.
And then...
did he break his...
well, the person called and said they couldn't come visit because they were having a root canal. And then she was like,
oh my goodness,
I'm not going to pray that anymore.
Well, if it works that well, we should add it to
add it to our list of prayers on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
The prayers of the people.
The prayers against the people.
The prayers against the people. Because that's what it says to do in the Old Testament.
Right, and we're Old Testament against people.
It's really awful.
I'm surprised that... I'm not surprised that people are drawn to the church, because he's, you know, scratching itching ears, telling things that are comfortable. But I am surprised when people who are who are Christians go to churches like this. What are they doing?
Yeah, they need to get out.
Yeah,
you need to get out.
Yeah.
Don't keep going there. That's really, really bad. The two don't conflict. The two testaments.
No, in fact, the book of Hebrews says that the old covenant, the whole purpose of it, was to foreshadow and prepare for the new.
The new.
So they don't contradict. They are the same gospel, the two covenants.
Also, the Old Testament is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's interesting to me is, I mean, when I feel more at home in the Old Testament, strangely. I mean, I do like to read. I of course, read the whole Bible, and there's no poor. I love all of it the best, of course. But I read the Old Testament with much more. I remember to read it more, and I spend more time in it, actually. And I find that it's the source of most of my personal furniture about the kingdom of God, like all the language and the furniture that I have in my own mind that gets me through the day comes from the Old Testament, almost all of it. And then the New Testament kind of sort of organizes it for me. The New Testament organizes the furniture of the Old Testament, arranges the room that I live in my own spiritual life. And I can't imagine reading the Old Testament with anger and bitterness and hatred, because God is so personal. I mean, I think that's part of the problem. God is too personal in the Old Testament. That's why Israel was always angry with him. Because he was so personal. He was so in love with them.
Hosea chapter 2.
And they didn't want to be with him. You know, how do you miss that? How do you miss all the love of God parts of the Old Testament? That's like, it's overpowering often. It really balances against the wrath in a way that can be uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think probably this comes from not having been given a paradigm through which to read the Old Testament. So if you're raised in a kind of dispensational background church where you're just kind of taught the Old Testament is there for, you know, life lessons from Moses, or how to be a good leader from David, or how to, you know, and so you have that kind of grid, you're not looking at the Old Testament through the lens of Christ, which is how Jesus himself says.
To look at the...
Yeah, Jesus himself says all the scriptures are written about me in John chapter 5. So
yeah, again, it's hard for me to understand how you miss that. That's
also, so if you read knowing that, everything I'm reading here in some way is going to point me to Jesus, then your eyes are open, your ears are open, you can hear what... You can see the grace in a way you couldn't before. You can see the patterns you couldn't before, and the types that are there. But if you go into it without that understanding, you're gonna find this. What? This is crazy.
It becomes a hateful.
Yeah, activity. Yeah. You don't understand what it's for. And Andy Stanley, I don't see how you can take the red parts of the scriptures where Jesus says, you search the scriptures because you think in them you'll find the way of salvation, but these are the scriptures that testify about me. And then say, oh no, the old covenant and new covenant are completely opposed to one another.
Yeah.
You're not even being consistent with your own heresy. Your heresy is that Jesus' words are the most authoritative. He says the Old Testament is about him.
Yeah, that's so weird. How is he reading?
Like, I don't know.
He's had a stroke.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Or something. Maybe he's having some kind of brain problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Well.
He looks angry.
Looks angry. Yeah. Very, very deceived as a person. You can see it in his face.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, a more cheerful way, though, because that's just depressing. But we have... The substance of this podcast was supposed to be about a very interesting and exciting movie that's coming out. It's not by Donald Trump, but Liberty University Cinema Department is producing a feature film called The Trump Prophecy. And so I was alerted to this by a dear friend who thought that we would enjoy it. So this is going to be wonderful. It's coming out in October, on October 2nd and 4th. And it's the person who produced it also produced the documentary on the Four Blood Moons. So that's really wonderful.
Can you Liberty University is doing that? Well, I guess I can.
No, there are really good people at Liberty University.
There are, but the guy, the president, is the one who is.
He does love Trump.
Who loves himself some Trump. Now, okay, let's just. I am not a Trump supporter. I think he's.
I mean, I am enjoying the
Trump. I'm a conservative politically, very conservative politically, but I was. Mm-hmm. I thought that Bill Clinton should have resigned because of his sexual infidelity, and he.
Yeah, but we've moved beyond that.
Right. Well, and because my thought was then, and as was the thought of just about every other conservative in the country, that if you lie to your wife and abuse your coworkers, that you can't be trusted.
You might lie to other people too.
Right. You might not be honest in your dealings with, you know, the American people or the Soviet Union or Russia or whatever. And so now, though, because the liar that we have is the president is the person who's lied to his wives and had multiple affairs he's a Republican. So we can dump over all of that moral concern.
Okay, well, you need to stop it with your hating.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, so no, but God anointed Trump as the victory cherub back in 2011, apparently.
Yeah, so this movie is going to be really wonderful. It's being led by somebody named Eldridge, and there's going to be students who are working on the production. It's now in post-production, and some students will stay on through the summer to help complete the film. It will be shown 1 year before this year's, or 1 month before this year's midterm elections. And then somebody is quoted here as saying, "My biggest concern," who is saying this? Michael Brown. "My biggest concern, though, is that this could lead to a hyper-patriotism, one in which the president cannot be criticized, or one that associates the kingdom of God with America, or one that leads to some kind of spiritual triumphalism."
What do you mean, lead to?
Nationally,
we're there.
Syndicated that conservative and messianic Jewish.
That is the world we're living in.
Well,
right
no,
now.
But, okay, hyper-patriotism in some quarters, but it's not going to sweep the nation. I mean, like, we're not having a problem with hyper-patriotism in every corner of America.
No, but but within our corner, which is, you know, in evangelical.
Well, it's not my corner. Well, what do you mean? My corner is very.
Okay, surfing on Facebook and seeing so many people really upset about the national anthem. You know, because the.
I think we have different friends on Facebook.
Well,
I don't.
Well, it's, you know, the king did put out that edict that whenever you hear the sound of the lute and the timbrel and the that you need to bow down to the idol that we've made, and if you don't do that, well, you get thrown into the furnace of fire. And so, fortunately, you know, the NFL has come around to the scene. That perspective.
I'm not friends with people who talk about the NFL. Thank goodness. So I don't even know what's going on with that.
The NFL is free to do that. I'm not saying that. It's just the insistence on the part of some that athletes be conformed to the worship of our flag.
Okay, wait. You're off topic, though.
I know, I'm sorry.
You're
off
topic.
I haven't spoken about politics in a long time, and this
I
is
know,
why.
I know, we've tried. Okay.
Because
you can't.
I can't do it without
you. You can't do it. Okay, so there's some people who are trying to cancel the project. Those people are at change.org, if you want to go sign it. And then I was looking for that great quote that you had.
I have it right here. You want me to read
the
prophecy?
Okay, well, so the whole movie is based on the prophecy that somebody named Mark Taylor received
in 2011.
From the Lord in 2011, and I think you should read that now.
All right. This is from 2000. Okay, it's a key to understanding this quote-unquote prophecy is to note that it's from 2011. And when did Trump become president? In 2016. He ran in the election of 2012.
I didn't even know that.
But he didn't make it out of the primaries.
Because that would have been crazy.
So, let's see. The Spirit of God says, I have chosen this man, Donald Trump, for such a time as this. Because Donald Trump has been chosen to be a concubine for the great Ahasuerus.
He's gone through 6 months of treatment with oils, and 6 months of treatment with essential oils, and 6 months of treatment with Wet World. Different. He's done all the beauty treatments for a year. In the bridal chamber of Ahasuerus.
He's going to be the woman that the great emperor picks. And he's going to save us from Mordecai, not from Mordecai, from...
From Haman. Yeah, Haman. Yeah. We're going to be saved.
From Haman.
From Haman. Because of Trump. It's a one-for-one correspondence.
Well, I wonder if he'll market some beauty products as a result of this.
Trump beauty, yeah. Esther beauty products.
For such a time as this.
For such a time as this.
Okay. So, the Spirit of God says, I have chosen this man, Donald Trump, for such a time as this. For as Benjamin Netanyahu is to Israel, so shall this man be to the United States of America. The Lord apparently does not explain what that means.
I know. Why didn't the Lord say?
What do you mean? What is this?
How is Netanyahu to Israel? What?
For I will use this man to bring honor, respect, and restoration to America. America will be respected once again as the most powerful and prosperous nation on earth. In parentheses here, other than Israel.
Oh, that's in parentheses.
The Lord wants to make sure we don't.
Oh, okay.
Because Israel is right now the most honored, respected nation on earth, prosperous nation on earth, but we're going to be second to Israel. Okay, and I love Israel.
I know.
I'm agreeing with the Lord about Israel.
I'm not agreeing about America, though.
No. The dollar will be the strongest it has ever been in the history of the United States, and it will once again be the currency by which all others are judged. Bible.
Of currency, huh? Our currency is... Yeah. I didn't know that was the most pressing issue of our time.
Well, this is the promise.
Like carpal tunnel syndrome.
Right. America is God's blessed country on earth, so of course it is. So he goes on, the Spirit of God says, I will protect America and Israel, for this next president will be a man of his word. Okay, full stop.
Okay, who was the next president, though?
We'll get two things here. First of all, a man of his word. This was... Oh, you know what? No. I guess he did pay Stormy Daniels the money he promised to pay her.
No, but the next president wasn't Donald Trump.
The second thing. Okay. So the first thing is that the Lord apparently has redefined the word...
next.
A man of his word.
Oh, right. To include
people who...
Don't keep
their philander and and cheat on their spouses. But then... He was the one who was elected.
Prophecy is hard. Let's go shopping.
So this immediately disqualifies Mark Taylor as a prophet, and no one should listen to him anymore because
he had the time wrong.
He has to be 100% accurate about everything he says in order to be considered a prophet. And right here in this line, we have two inaccuracies. Trump is not a man of his word, at least not according to how the Bible defines being a man of your word. And he did not win the 2012 election. Well, should I go on, though?
Okay.
When Trump speaks, the world will listen and know that there is something greater in him than all the others before him.
What?
There's something greater in Trump than all the other presidents before him.
Even like...
Saith the
George
Lord.
George Washington.
Yeah, George Washington. Yeah.
I don't know. There were some other good ones. I can't remember who they are right now. But
George Washington, Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, yeah. I feel like he was...
Fools. All fools compared to Trump. Now we have the real thing.
That's really great. I mean, that's so good. If you put it in a novel, no one would believe you.
See, if we just... I guess all the other presidents were like...
The moon.
The four, yeah, Donald to Donald Trump Trump's son. Is the son. They were foreshadowing that there were shadows to the real, true savior of our country, Donald Trump.
I'm confused about why the country needs saving.
Wait, the Lord has more to say.
Okay, sorry.
This man's word is his bond. This man's word is his bond.
That's really funny.
People are eating this up like it's. People are eating this up like it's, you know, cheesecake or candy.
I don't actually know a lot of people who. So I have to write this on Facebook.
Why do you think Liberty's making a movie about it? Because there's this. We've talked about this before in the podcast. There's the Trump victory chair of prophecy that he's the Cyrus. Well, in fact, he's not Cyrus. He's the Esther, apparently.
He's Esther and Cyrus. The gender-bending president of 2018.
Right.
I don't know. I can't keep them all straight.
Yeah.
Is that the end of the prophecy?
America's word is his bond, and America will know this... And the enemy will...
Which enemy?
I guess it's Satan.
Oh, okay,
it's
Satan.
Satan is going to be afraid of Donald Trump. Yeah, Donald Trump is not quite so bad news for the Democrats.
He's not...
Good news
for... He's just potentially not very good news for the devil.
Identify that reference, but
that's all right. The true believers will know what we just quoted.
Okay, so the enemy will fear this, for this man, the enemy, not our enemies, it's the enemy. It must be the serpent. It must be Satan. The Trump is going to crush Satan under his feet. For this man will be fearless. The spirit says, when the financial harvest begins. Yeah, which spirit? That's a good question. The spirit says, when the financial harvest begins, so it. Right. When the financial harvest begins, so shall it. Okay, so shall it parallel in the spiritual. Who knew the Holy Spirit talks about things? This is like the spiritual and the natural.
In the natural.
He talks like a Pentecostal. I had no idea. And he must. I mean, really, there must be, when I read about those passages, this is kind of good news for men everywhere. I mean, when they read those passages about adultery in the Bible, it doesn't quite mean what, we thought it meant before. Because obviously Trump is a man for whom his word is his bond. And he did pay Stormy Daniels the full amount that he promised to pay her.
Well, as Jesus would have said, because in the Old Testament he would have said, you should stone both of them, Stormy Daniels and Donald Trump should have been stoned for committing adultery. But in the New Covenant, give $100,000. Isn't that kind of a small amount of money, too?
$140,000.
That's like where in that Austin Powers movie where the guy is sitting there saying, I'm going to have $100,000. And everybody says, what? What? Couldn't it have been a million?
I think it was a million.
When was this? The 90s?
He was asking for $1 million at first, and they all laughed at him.
$1 million. Well, that's what I'm saying. Trump should have offered $1 million, and then maybe she would have been quiet.
Well, this is before she became well-known.
Oh, right. So...
So he could offer her less money then.
It's possible that I haven't read about this and I don't know the details. Because every time I see the word Stormy Daniels online, I just laugh a little bit.
Scroll by.
Well, I don't know, but I love it. This is the thing. I just think that for Christians who are really stressed by Donald Trump and who feel like crying all the time, That's the wrong way. What you need to do is enjoy this time in humanity's history, because this is wonderful. This is like a daily sitcom, and you can. This is marvelous. You're looking at Facebook and sitting, listening to my dulcet prose.
I'm listening to you.
I think this is a wonderful time in human history. Donald Trump is one of the most amusing and diverting and interesting figures in the history of the world. His hair, his prose, his tweeting, his travels around the world. I've just enjoyed the last 2 years so much. Okay,
so having said all the stuff I said, credit where credit's due. The economy's doing great. He has made some good decisions with regard to abortion. Hasn't gone nearly far enough. He could possibly put up a Supreme Court judge. If we get another judge appointment during his presidency, it'll be a good thing. Let's see. The North Korea thing is fine. Yeah, oh, good. He's doing good. I mean, but the reality is we don't... conservatives, anyway, have never thought of the presidency as needing someone like just a technocrat, someone who does a good job. Now, that was the argument the liberals were making about Bill Clinton. Oh, don't worry about the sex in the White House. Don't worry about him cheating on his wife. Look at the economy. It's the economy stupid. Remember that?
No, I wasn't here.
The economy stupid. And now that's what conservatives are saying now. It's the economy stupid.
That's
exactly.
Really,
yeah.
That's
so
marvelous.
So anyway.
Well, so this is where I don't understand American culture, because I would have thought that just having a technocrat would have been fine. I listened to all the Clinton impeachment hearings when I was traveling from one place to another. I didn't understand it at all. That if he's the president, of course he's got a little bit on the side, or several little bits. What do you expect? I mean, you're not hiring somebody to be a man of his word. You're hiring somebody to do the work of the thing, whatever the thing is. If you're Cyrus,
see, that's exactly liberal. I'm not mouthing something.
I didn't grow up here. I didn't grow up in a place where I would have expected the president to be to have the moral high ground. Like, where? What is that?
Well, that was the expectation, and so, but admittedly, there, of course, John F. Kennedy, other presidents didn't live up to that, but the people didn't know on a wide scale that he wasn't.
That's terrible. Why?
Right. Well, because we do have this idea that our leaders should be models of leadership.
Be seen to be something they're not.
Well, no. I think if people have known about Kennedy's proclivities, there would have been an outcry. But
really?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't understand this country at all. Don't understand it.
Why do you think it's okay for a president to have a little bit on the side?
I don't think it's okay, but I would like in a president is somebody who doesn't set himself up for dictator for life, and who doesn't kill half the population genocidally, and who doesn't bankrupt everything through personal corruption by building a great cathedral to himself in the middle of nowhere, or I'm describing the leaders of other countries here. Like,
do you think that's possible to do while still remaining faithful to your wife?
No, I mean, I don't think that people who rise to that level of power are going to remain faithful to their wives. I don't know. I've just read about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I've read some stuff about Kennedy. Like, I've been reading about all these presidents who... Trump, of course, surpasses in all of his greatness.
So let me just say, so if I ever became super duper powerful, you would totally understand.
No, you're not.
It's totally okay then, because you need a certain level of power, and hey, whatever. It doesn't.
I'm saying
is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. Don't try to twist me
around.
That's
what you're saying. You're giving me.
No. That's not what we're doing here. Is where you apply your American lens, and then I try to make sense of a political landscape that I continue not to understand. Because, okay, here, I don't get why so many Americans
need... You grew up in French West Africa. Okay, that makes sense. I remember now. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm just putting it together.
The word I'm searching for, I'm not allowed to say on the podcast. I don't understand the need for a lot of evangelical Christians to associate Trump with the spirit of God. Like,
oh, I don't understand that either.
I don't understand why you would expect your leader to remain faithful to his wife. I think that's an unreasonable expectation. It would be great if he could do that, but most presidents aren't Christian. Like, most presidents don't have a moral framework with which they operate. So I wouldn't impose necessarily my Christian moral expectations on. I'm sad when presidents commit adultery, but I'm not surprised. And I don't think, oh, well, the world is ending and we're not respected by all the nations of the world anymore because a man has cheated on his wife. We're never, like, respected by the world, or we were, but not for the reasons that we all think.
Well, first of all, you know, Trump is a Christian.
Okay.
He claims to be a Christian.
Okay. I know, because he's the best Christian. Right. Best Christian.
I can't think of a president, actually, who hasn't claimed to be a Christian.
Really?
Yeah.
This is where I'm just completely uneducated on this topic.
They've all
claimed to be Christians.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really shocking. Well, so I have a problem there, too. Why would you?
Right, but okay, so have you heard of Common Grace?
Yeah, okay, no, don't do this. We're not doing this. We're having an actual...
Do you think that someone who's not a Christian can keep his word or her word?
Yeah, no, that's not what we're doing. We're not having that conversation that we've had many times before. People can keep their word, but
it's okay when they don't. Is that what you're saying?
No. All right. Well, why don't you go be president, and then I look forward to you being faithful, being the trumpet of God, and the spirit of God, and the Esther of God, and the Cyrus of God. Look, I think it's very troublesome, but I do think that there's an interesting American expectation that has set us up for this mind-blowing moment. The expectation that a president would be a certain kind of moral person with certain religious proclivities. And that the right and the left, I did just finish Moral Combat, which I'm still trying to write about. It allowed for a moral landscape to develop where the right and the left both said and did strange things because the president had to be a certain, we had this idea of morality tied to Christian.
Which is terrible.
It's not terrible.
We were just talking about the structures of our society falling and collapsing, right? And one of the structures of our culture was this idea that there's integrity and honor in public service, and that we would expect our leaders to carry that integrity with them, both in their dealings with other countries and in their dealings with their people and in dealings with their wives.
Which one of them?
Well,
their wives.
Yes.
Their first, second, and third, fourth wives. That they each build a little
house
for. It doesn't
say their wife. Their wife.
I think it's really interesting. I can't quite wrap my mind around it, and I feel like I'm a little stretching here. I feel like there's some kind of connection between the religious landscape, and the moral overlay, and then the trumpet of God and the prophecy that's going on.
Oh, there's a huge one, and because he's not that, and that's been manifestly proved he's not quote unquote man of his word. That's why you have to have all the prophecies popping up. And God's saying it's okay. He's like Cyrus. You know, Cyrus wasn't really moral either, but you know he saved the people of God by sending them back from exile, and so look, you know, Trump's like that. We got to have these. We got to have these extra biblical revelations now. Oh, no, he really is my chosen one. Yeah.
What I don't understand is the psychological need for any of those things. It's a cultural...
I don't have a psychological need for a man being sent by God to be our president. I don't have that at all. I don't think our president should be sent by God. I don't think America is part of God's chosen... We're not Israel, right? So we're not Israel. And there's
sure though?
And you can read the Bible, and America is not mentioned one time, one single time. Well, wait, maybe it is in chapter 18 of Revelation, where the whore of Babylon is destroyed. Babylon's destroyed. That might be America, but we're not mentioned once in the scriptures, and so I don't have a need for God to have a special chosen instrument in America to affect his purposes for this blessed country. But I do have an expectation that most people were raised with in my generation, back in those days.
You're aging, though, before our very eyes.
That leaders have integrity, honesty, and that honesty carries over to their private lives as well as their public life. And
that's the part where I don't understand that. I don't get it.
Why?
But I'm going to work on it. I'm going to read some more books.
Do you want your...
No, I don't want a liar as a president. I don't have an expectation that I would have one that wasn't a liar. I expect that all men lie.
Well, yeah, all human beings are speak with a forked tongue, yes.
Yeah, so...
But that doesn't mean that they all have to cheat on their husbands. And their wives. Well, I'm sorry, I was going back to the Esther thing. Doesn't mean that all husbands have to cheat on their wives.
They don't have to, but they might. They probably will.
Sweetie, what are you...
Okay, I think we should... I think this is a conversation that is bigger... Because we're not conflating the church with... The presidency.
You made a uniform statement. All men are going to cheat on their wives. No. How can I even be a pastor now? I'm now it's doomed because you've said I'm cheating on you at some point.
No, I don't think all men have to. I'm not surprised when people in great power, like the president, do. I'm not surprised by that.
Okay, so it's okay. So make sure we carry this standard.
I don't expect you to cheat on me.
Unless I have great power. Yeah, I have great power.
No, please don't.
Holds are barred. Whatever.
Well, I think this is the perfect podcast to set up for our important trip to Israel.
Yeah.
And.
Wow, I didn't.
Do you feel like our marriage is like something
that's going to blow? You've revealed a side of yourself that I've not known before that existed.
Yeah. We've had this very conversation numerous times.
No, I just, but the logic.
I don't understand.
I'm having a hard time with your logic. I mean, I understand if you have no moral compass whatsoever, saying I don't care what the president does, as long as I get my taxes low and my, whatever.
I care, but I don't. It wasn't a big deal to me ever that the president be a certain kind of moral and religious persona.
I don't care if he's a religious persona. I'm not voting for a pastor. I am voting for an honest person.
I didn't. When people said, "Oh, Obama is a Muslim or he's a Christian," I didn't really think he was probably either of those things. He seemed to me as kind of religious and. That didn't bother me. He could, and I think it was great. He seemed to have a great marriage with Michelle. But if word was discovered that he wasn't entirely faithful during his time in office to her, I wouldn't be at all surprised. And I wouldn't, go back and look over his presidency and think, oh, everything I thought about him was wrong. How can this be? My whole world is shattered. That just wouldn't happen to me. Now, I have a very different feeling about people in the church. So when Tullian fell, I was genuinely grieved about that. And he's in the church. He ought not. He does have a religious moral framework and worldview that should have brought him to a place of safety in his marriage where he did not cheat on his wife. And if somebody dug up something about another famous Christian who maybe has died, I would be really, really sad. So what, Bart, what was that stuff about? Who was the
Karl Barth?
Karl Barth that moved his mistress into his house and lived there with his wife. That did really shock me. I was really sad and shocked by that. But when I read that Franklin Delano Roosevelt had his woman in the White House, I wasn't shocked, and I wasn't really sad. I wasn't like, "Oh no, America's over."
When I realized what a philanderer John F. Kennedy was, I admired him as a kid a little bit. I wasn't alive during his day, but I admired what I read about him as a kid, a little kid. But then when I got older, and I saw the other side of him, I lost a lot of respect for him, and I thought. I became very cynical toward his presidency, the stuff that he said. And then you delve a little bit deeper and you see, there's a lot more going on down underneath the missile crisis than than we're told. And I don't trust it. His sexual infidelity was reflective of his political maneuver. And so you, I don't know why you can bifurcate the human soul so you can lie in one area and not lie in the other.
I don't think you should lie. I don't think that you should lie in one area and not in the other area. But in a, if you're in a secular situation and you're essentially godless, even if you're claiming to be a Christian, I don't have an expectation that you're going to be a good person, and I'm going to just pray that,
I don't think
that you don't destroy everything.
We're not asking people to be Jesus. We're asking people to be basically honest. Basic honesty. I made a promise to this woman.
Yeah,
I won't,
well, I mean,
therefore, have sex with another woman.
I'm for that. I'm not against it. I'm just saying I'm not surprised at all.
We're not going anywhere. We've been talking more than an hour.
I know. This is like the longest podcast on record.
Yeah.
So I feel like an apology is due.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we have a lot of things to do, including trying to understand each other in our marriage. I guess we'll be talking about this more. Since you're also not going to be able to let it go. So this is going to be our conversation all week while you try to figure out why I'm such a bad person. For such a time as this. Anyway, I don't know if we'll be... I think it's possible we won't be back next week because we will be in Jerusalem, but I'm hoping to maybe shoot some videos, and
yeah,
I'm going to be writing, and you might write some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll tweet. We'll probably tweet. It's going to be amazing. And so don't, like, tune out next week, but there probably won't be a podcast. So until then, thank you for listening.